family, welcome to The Village Talk, the podcast that highlights and celebrates amazing women of color making a difference in their communities every day and the village that supports them, because you know it takes a village. I am your host, Victoria Downs, and I am so excited to share the space with you. Let's get into it. Okay, welcome back, everybody. I'm really excited to be on the mic. This is your girl, Victoria, and we are back for season three of The Village Talk. Thank you for joining me. I'm really excited to have my guest with me tonight. Well, whatever time you're listening to this, but she's with me tonight. Yeah, Vanessa Lewis is my guest, very first guest for season three, and Vanessa is a Boston-based communications professional. She's been working for over a decade creating content for local nonprofits and state agencies. Vanessa believes in the power of storytelling and using stories as the ultimate connector. I'm super excited to welcome Vanessa to the show. This is my very first time meeting her. Like, I'm looking at her on Zoom and she's so beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
I'm just so excited to get into her story and also learn from her and how we can use our stories to leverage our personal brands or our professional brands. Welcome to the show, Vanessa.
Thank you for having me, Vicky, and congratulations on the third season of the podcast.
Yay, thank you so much. I appreciate that. Thank you for joining me. I'm so excited to get into your story. I've told the listeners about you, a little bit about you, but we want to get even deeper. So tell us who you are and what you do.
I am Vanessa Lewis. I am a young Black woman from the city of Boston. I was born and raised here. And I would say that I've always been a storyteller. I've always enjoyed the craft of creative writing. And so I started at about age 12 with journaling. In middle school, I did a lot of writing the bad poetry that we all do and writing song lyrics and that kind of thing. I wrote my first novel in college. I published that in 2013. And so this year I wrote my first memoir. I moved away from fiction and started talking about myself.
That is awesome. So you started journaling at age 12.
Yes. My earliest memory is seventh grade journaling when I transferred into Boston Latin School. It was a big transition for me. Did not enjoy it. Couldn't tell my parents. I was scared to admit that I wasn't being a successful student that I had been in the past. So a lot of those feelings I took to my journal.
Now, why do you feel that you were scared in retrospect as an adult now, your 12-year-old self in that transition? Yeah. Why weren't you comfortable to say, I don't like it and I'm not doing well? And how did you get to journaling? Is this something that someone introduced you to, or did you stumble upon a notebook and just started writing and
exactly,
you just like, whoa, okay, yeah, this is something.
Yeah. It was definitely like, I have this blank notebook and this is a place where I can put my feelings that no one will see. Eventually, yes, my mom did end up reading my journal, but the idea in starting the practice was that it was a private place for my feelings.
I like that. As a young woman deciding, yeah, that you needed your own space and, yeah, taking that space. So tell us about your home at growing up. Who was in the home? What was, sure, that like?
So my mom had me at age 17. So I was raised in her parents' home. So my grandparents were more of a primary caretaker for me than my mom, because of course she was 17. And then 6 years after I was born, my little brother came along. So growing up in my house, it was my grandparents, my mom, her siblings had moved out by the time we grew up, and my little brother. And so you had asked what the pressure was to feel like a good student and to not be honest about how I was doing in school. And part of that was that my brother had more behavioral issues in school than I did. So I was the quote unquote good kid. So I just didn't want to be the source of trouble. Like, they had enough going on with my brothers, and I just wanted to make sure that at least they could depend on me to perform well in school.
Yeah, that's pressure that a lot of children have that,
yeah,
a lot of times adults don't acknowledge because they just don't know.
Right.
They're so wrapped up we are so wrapped up. I have three children, and I can tell you for a fact that I'm sure that there are things that they may not say because they don't want to bother me.
Especially when there's someone that like actually requires the attention.
You
feel, even as a child, you feel the sense of guilt of like wanting, of adding to your parents' stress, you know?
Yeah. Well, good for you that you found that outlet. So walk us through, you know, from age 12 to when you wrote your first novel. And what's the name of the novel?
So my first novel is called If It Isn't Love. Most of my published work is named after New Edition songs.
We have listeners from all over the globe, right? So talk to us about New Edition and what that means, especially for Boston. And we, when we say Boston, we mean Boston, Massachusetts.
Absolutely.
So New Edition, what's the significance?
You know, I grew up in the 80s. Candy Girl, If It Isn't Love, those videos are formative. I still know the choreography. They were from Roxbury, you know, like 15 minutes from where I grew up in Dorchester, and they were super successful. And they've managed to have that longevity for years. So that music is really, really important to my formative years.
That's awesome. Would you say that that's part of your inspiration for getting into writing and songwriting?
I remember in the past that I did want to write songs as a kid. I didn't understand the industry, but I was always enamored by song lyrics. So I would write song lyrics as well.
That's dope. Good for you. I mean, I love when people use, you know, the talents that they have to create. Mm-hmm. And you don't just create, I mean, you may start off creating for yourself, but you don't end up creating just for yourself. You create for other people. And I tell people all the time, especially my clients, that your message is not just for you. Like it's for someone else. You know, you've already experienced it. It's time for you to pass that lesson along.
That's what art is to me. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I love that you're able to do that. Now talk us through, you know, like some of the experiences writing and how you've used writing as an outlet. And maybe there's a particular experience that you can share.
Let's see. So writing had been a private outlet for many years. It wasn't until I think about 4 years after my undergraduate education where I found a box that had all my floppy disks from school. And I went through to just kind of see if there was anything that I wanted to use like for articles or any information that I needed. And one of the discs was actually my first novel. So I had written a whole book without realizing I wrote a book because I was just doing it in my spare time in school. And so when I discovered that and I actually read the whole story, it felt like a really good story to me. And so I started the research in terms of how to publish without using the big four companies.
That's awesome. So like you just went back into your treasures
and
pulled out a book that you didn't realize that you wrote.
Yeah.
Okay. So what was, is this the memoir that you published?
No, that was If It Isn't Love. So that it turned out to be like a 60 to 80 page Word document on the floppy disk. I learned how to format it. I actually studied, literary publishing at Emerson College. It's a week-long certificate program just to get the basics of understanding on how to publish. I sought out editors and designers and pulled the project together. So it took me about 2 years from the time that I found it to producing a published work.
Okay. And what was the book about?
It was about a young woman who grew up in Dorchester like me. She had always admired her parents' relationship and she was trying to find that kind of love for herself. But young women often don't make the right choices for themselves. So it's just her exploratory journey in love.
So you said it's fiction. Is it?
It is. Yes.
Is it fiction based on nonfiction?
No, I don't think so. I actually, when I read it now, I see myself as the child in the book. Mm-hmm. I don't see myself as the main character whose name was Keisha. Now, there are many readers who do not believe me when I say I'm not Keisha, but it's true.
Okay, we'll take your word for it. So now you've published your memoir, A Little Bit of Love.
Yes.
Talk to us about that. How did that come about?
After the first book, I decided that writing was something that I wanted to do professionally. So I went to grad school for creative writing. I got my MFA in creative writing and fiction. And I was working on the follow-up to If It Isn't Love There. It was going to be a three-part series. But I just kept running into roadblocks and had writer's block for the first time. And there were just so many mental blocks in getting that story right that one day it occurred to me that I couldn't necessarily write another fiction book without understanding my own story. And so that's when I went back to the journals and I pulled together a collection of important stories from my life and wrote 20 essays.
Wow. Okay, so a few things. Mm-hmm. You had writer's block, mm-hmm. and somehow you worked through it. So I'm going to ask you, how did you work through it? And are there some practical steps? So we might have somebody who's listening who maybe wants to write a book, mm-hmm. but they have not taken that first step because they don't know how to start. Right. And that's what you had to do. You had to start because mm-hmm. once you mm-hmm. started, you were able to figure it out. Mm-hmm. So walk us through that process of unblocking the writer's block. Mm-hmm.
So for me, the challenge was that once I enrolled in grad school, I pigeonholed myself into fiction writer box. And whenever I find myself in a box, it stifles me. So then I felt like I couldn't write the other things that I was interested in because I'm a fiction writer. I have this degree in fiction. And there was that feeling as well as the feeling of maybe not being able to do a story that would live up to the expectations of those who are waiting for the second book. And so that's where the source of blocking came from. And I had to identify my feelings, which meant going back to journaling and figuring out why I was having these challenges. So if I were to, now that's just my practice. And again, most of my wellness practice is around writing. So I know that it's not something that's comfortable for other people, but I would suggest starting with writing prompts. Sometimes there are websites that have just questions. You choose one question, you answer the question in writing, and you'd be surprised at what you learn about yourself.
That's an awesome tip. Yeah. Like just answering a question is like writing having a conversation. Prompts. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's great. Yeah, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love that. As you were talking, you mentioned the box, the mm-hmm. comfort box, mm-hmm. right? Because you had already written a fiction book. You were comfortable there and you mm-hmm. felt you could replicate that.
Yeah.
But in order to do something, you had to step out of that box. Mm-hmm. Now, I love that you mentioned that because a lot of people are comfortable. And while there's nothing wrong with being comfortable,
right.
you know, if that's where you choose to be, then be there. But if you aspire to be more, then you have to do something different.
You have to do something about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So thank you for saying that, because I think that's a really important point. All right. So you got over the writer's block and you were able to write this, you know, memoir and sharing, you know, parts of yourself. What was that process like in pulling together the things you wanted to share? How did you decide which stories to share versus which not to?
Oh, so this is an interesting story, and I'm not sure how spiritual you and your audience is, but I feel like I was led to writing that story. It was Memorial Weekend of 2019. I was on the cusp of ending a long-term relationship, and my grandmother's health had become terminal. So within that first week of June, I had ended a relationship. I lost my grandmother. Like, I had compounding trauma from that one week. And I understood for myself that in order to be able to get through that I was going to have to get counseling. And I was sitting with my therapist one day, and it occurred to me that, like, if people understood how good a therapy session feels, they might actually be more open to going, because I think there's a lot of stigma and just untruth around getting counseling. And so I even mentioned to him that I felt like I would like to write about that experience.
I love that you said that. Mm-hmm. And you're right. There is a stigma still.
Mm-hmm.
As much as we've advanced, there is so far yet we have to go.
Yeah.
Around mental health and seeking mental help, you know, like getting therapy, going to yeah. therapy, talking to somebody. And the bottom line is get help.
Right.
If you can't figure it out or you're struggling to figure it out, you don't mm-hmm. have to do it alone. There are people who go get whole degrees,
right.
PhDs right. for this stuff.
They learn how to you help know? You. They are there for that reason.
And I have a really good friend, Naisha Deed, who is a mental health advocate.
Yes.
And one of the things, the references that she uses, and I don't know if it's original to her or somewhere she learned it, but it's, you know, if you broke your arm, would you go see a doctor?
Right. Right.
Right. And if your mind isn't right and you can't control what's happening, it doesn't feel good. Mm-hmm. Get help. It's really that. And mm-hmm. in doing so, you were able to sort out what you needed to
right.
do.
Right.
It becomes clearer, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I love that you're able to do that for yourself. So like the theme for you, and I don't know if you realize this, is there's a certain independence to you. Like you just mm-hmm. figure it out.
Yeah.
Like I'm just going to figure
it out. I have to. Yeah. So I have an anxiety disorder. Okay. And so the source of my anxiety is uncertainty. I watched a great episode of Minds Explained on Netflix, and I guess there are four different kinds of anxiety, but for me, I identify with uncertainty. So like I have to know, I need all the details up front before I walk into the room. I need to know who's going to be there. If I'm going to a restaurant, I need to see the menu first. Like I need to know. So if there's something that I want to figure out, I am almost obsessive in getting those details. Yeah.
Well, good for you for figuring out how,
yeah.
first figuring out what, mm-hmm. and then getting help to figure out the how.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Thank you.
All right. So you've written your memoir, you're mm-hmm. managing your business. I imagine you have a whole business now because you've written mm-hmm. two books, you're a published author. Mm-hmm. And you also have a job, a part-time job.
Mm-hmm.
Can you walk us through what that balance looks like for you?
I am very regimented. I need calendars. I need email reminders. Like I have to have things in writing, especially because of the way my brain works. I mean, I have to write things down. So on Sunday, usually I'm putting together an idea of what I need the work week to look like. I know that certain days I work with the college and would have meetings. So I wouldn't put meetings for my personal freelance business in that bracket. So just, it's really a juggling act, to be honest. But yeah, I have a part-time job where I work 30 hours for a local college. And then outside that work, I sell books, I sell journals, and I also freelance write. So you did mention Naisha Deed. I've worked with her a couple of times. I wrote her original biography, and she's actually part of the inspiration for being able to tell my own story, because I learned that I could tell other stories with such compassion, but I hadn't looked at myself that way.
Oh my goodness. I love that. I love that. I love that. 6 degrees of separation. Yeah. I absolutely love that. Oh, I feel like I have to call her after this interview yes. now to just let her know, hey girl, I met your girl. So I love that. I love that, you know, you're coming into your own with telling your story, because again, yes. it's not just for you anymore.
Right.
Like it's healing to talk about it when you're ready.
Yeah.
But it's also inspiration and maybe healing for somebody else to give absolutely. Them the inspiration. And like you stated, Naisha did that for you.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So balancing your full-time job and your part-time freelance work, Mm-hmm. Like you said, it's a juggling act. And, you know, one of the things you mentioned is that you're regimented. You have to have a schedule. You need to know. And as you're talking, I'm like, she's describing me because I do the same thing.
Yeah.
Right. I have a calendar. My husband and my mm-hmm. kids know if it's not on the calendar, it's not happening. Happen. Don't even yep. come down here.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a priority for me to maintain right. that calendar because right. it keeps my life in order.
It's for your and own wellness. And that's exactly. what I had to tell myself.
Yeah. So I don't know if I feel good or I feel bad.
I know.
But it works. It and helps. It's, and I yeah. think for our listeners, it's do what works for you.
Right.
Schedules work right. for me. Details work right. for me. If you tell me I'm going somewhere, I need the address now.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I want to know how long it's going to take me to get there.
Right.
So I can plan for commute, you know? Right. It's just, I just need that.
Yeah.
But do what works for you and do what right. keeps you, do what keeps you a priority so that yes. you're able to keep things the way you like yeah. it so you can reduce your stress level. Because even if you're a full-time, you know, employee or a full-time entrepreneur, there's still balancing acts that you have right. to maintain. So
right.
including something in your life that helps you to keep track of everything without stressing you out will be really helpful. So thank absolutely. You for sharing that.
Yeah.
All right. Great. I absolutely love this conversation. and I want to ask you about a term that okay. you use, which is, you believe that stories are the ultimate connector. What do you mean mm-hmm. by that?
I have always believed that even if your story is unique to you, there's something universal about it. So the idea of sharing your experience or talking about what inspired you to start a company or just the getting to the root cause of things is usually what can connect us all. And so in my freelance writing, I try to find the connector in the story.
Okay. So I understand what you mean. And I think that's it's beautifully stated. But can you share an example? Like, what do you mean by like the root cause? Like, what do you what do you mean by
so
that?
So I'll use the memoir for an example. It's specifically about me and my relationship to my grandmother. But since it's been released, I've heard from readers saying how they can relate in terms of the anxiety aspect or maybe the television watch. There's 20 essays. And even though the thread is my grandma, there's still little pieces that each reader has found to connect to. I have my very first essay is about how much I do not like the concept of winter. I just think it's a bad idea in general, right?
And I agree.
I mean, like, you got to bundle up, you the wind's hurting your face, all these things. I just don't like it as a concept. And so I heard from a reader in Maryland, and she says, you know, winters in Maryland are nowhere near as bad. But in the part where I talk about how my mom had to layer me up in the clothes and you can barely put down your arms in the snowsuit, like she really identified with that, right? Even though she's not from New England. So that's the connector.
I love that. Thank you for sharing that. And, you know, like people think that when we talk about stories, we talk about our personal stories, like right. our personal experiences, our backstories. Yeah. And especially for like women in business, and I'd say women of color in business, particularly Black women, mm-hmm. we don't share our stories. We don't use our personal stories. We don't leverage our personal stories mm-hmm. in our businesses. Right. And part of the reason I find, and I work with a lot of clients, and some of the things I hear is nobody wants to know that.
It's
nobody
not
wants
true,
to
though.
Know. Nobody wants to know that. Nobody wants to see that. And I'm like, you know, share your backstory, share your processes, like let them into your world because you are the brand.
Yeah. So you people don't buy us? Into products anymore. They buy
Thank
into
you.
People.
Yeah. Thank you. So talk to us a little bit about how you can use your personal stories. Mm-hmm. How you can leverage your personal brand stories, because I call them brand stories because they're unique right. to you.
Right.
So absolutely. How you can leverage your personal brand stories to increase profits in your business or just to increase your brand visibility.
Mm-hmm. So I can use an example of one of your former guests who I'm also acquainted with, Shauna Bryant from Shauna Bryant Consulting. Right. She is an event planner, and I helped her to write her brand story too. So what was interesting about that story was that she began learning the logistics of event planning through her son's Pop Warner football program. Like, she realized after maybe a couple of weeks that there was always someone trying to figure out who's going to bring the snacks. Like, no one ever coordinated who's bringing the snacks for these kids while they're out in the field. And so that's where her interest lied. And that's how the idea for her event planning company grew. Now, it seems like a very simple detail, but we all know we've been on the field and you see a bunch of hungry kids and you're like, how could you forget who's going to bring the snacks? Right?
That is so true. That is so true. That is so true. Because when I read it, I thought about my son.
Yeah.
When he played basketball and I had to go to BJ's every, I think it was like every 3 weeks or something like that, I had to get snacks. And I would relate to that because
and then
it was always a nightmare.
Player, you're like, she's the one that would remember to bring the snacks. I'm working with her.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's how it
Thank
works.
You
that's
so much. Record. That's awesome. So like, it's so important to incorporate those stories because we think of them as nothing, right? They're personal memories and we're really attached to them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like that's a happy story. That's a story that we can laugh about and smile about. But there's some people who do like heart work. There's some people who do healing work. Mm-hmm. And there are parts of them that has healed or is still healing. Mm-hmm. But sharing those experiences and how they're navigating could also help their audiences and inspire, like thinking about Naisha's story. You know, like if she had kept that story to herself, Pure Spark would not be a spark at all.
Here. Right.
You know, and for my listeners who are not familiar with Naisha D, she is a mental health advocate who is the founder of Pure Spark. You can check her out at purespark.org. Mm-hmm. Like, I absolutely love the girl and the work that she's doing. So I would shamelessly plug her all day long.
All day.
But, you know, her organization and the work that she's doing, you would not be telling your story.
If I didn't sit down with Naisha, I would not have the incentive. You're absolutely right about that. Yeah.
So I think the moral of the story is really thinking about those parts of yourself that you think nobody cares about.
Right.
Those parts of yourself that you may be ashamed of.
Right.
You know, those parts of yourself that you may have never shared with anybody that may have happened to you. Yeah. Those are those parts that people want to see. Like, we see enough of the filters. We see enough of the differences. We see everybody's doing the same thing.
Right.
You know, so the way I teach my clients to use their stories is really go to those places and pull out those stories, share the processes. Like, nobody can copy you.
Right. Exactly.
Like, even if they copy you, they can't be you.
They can't.
So like, you have the secret sauce. So don't be afraid to share how you're winning, because people want to see it. We show people that we're winning, but we don't show them how we get there.
Right.
And it's always a mystery. And I feel like, you know, sharing your personal brand stories really help people not only to connect with you, but to inspire them to start, you know? So thank you for sharing that. All right, cool. I want to talk about growing up in Boston and what that was like, right? What were some of the fun things that you did? When people hear about Boston, there's a lot of stories, and we won't get into them because they're not all pleasant. But I want to hear from your take. Like, what was that like growing up in Boston? What did you do growing up? Like, when you went to school, did you go to the corner store? Like, what was that like? Talk us through that.
I would say I truly enjoyed my childhood here in Dorchester. When I started my publishing company, I called it Dorchester's Daughter because I feel so much of who I am is about being raised in Boston. I think my favorite thing about summers in Boston as a kid were open fire hydrants. The children these days do not get the blessing of running through an open fire hydrant on a Saturday. And I am so sad for them because those were good times. There was a corner store right at the bus stop where I got off the 28 after school. So get right off the 28, get my bag of Doritos and my Mystic, and then head back home to do my homework. It was great. I I understand that there are, I mean, even just the generational difference between myself and my mom, because my mom and her siblings were the kids that were bused, you know? So they have a very different recollection of growing up in Boston than I do. So I hold space for that, but I can't say that the 90s did get a little violent, but yeah. I truly treasure growing up here.
That's awesome. I'm so glad you had a great experience in this. Yeah. You know, with every experience, no matter where you grow up, there's going to be the good and there's going to be right. the not so good, yeah. you know? So, but I love that you said you grab your Doritos and you're mistaken. Like, I'm just minding my own business. I just need some snacks to power through this homework.
My homework is
yes. Mind your own business. I remember that too. So I didn't grow up here. Okay. I came here when I was 16. So I didn't have the experience of running through sprinklers or fire hydrants because I was an adult. Like, not an adult. Yeah. Like I was almost an adult.
You were too cool
I was
a young.
Yeah. Like I was wearing lipstick and I was curling my hair. Like nobody has time for that. So I definitely relate to those kids, our kids now, because they don't have that experience, but I can just imagine the kind of joy that it brings in a summer day.
Filtered joy.
Yeah.
We had a guy on our block. We called him Uncle Al. He was everybody's uncle. And he somehow had the tool from the, fire department that could open the hydrant. So even if they would block it, he would find a way to open it for us. And it was almost weekly, I swear. We just had this big hydrant full of water to run through. We were in our bathing suits. We get buckets and fill them and pour them on each other. Oh. It was so good time. I miss those days.
Yeah. So I absolutely love that. And I think those kind of memories are the things that remind us and keep us grounded of where we come from, right? Mm-hmm. So in talking about grounding, like how do you, in addition to your schedule and your regimens, how do you keep yourself grounded in the craziness of today, like the world as it is?
That's a great question. I have noticed that I'm not sleeping as well as I have in other years. So if I wake up in the night, I'll choose something to watch that I haven't seen in a while, or I think I work really well with nostalgia to cope now. There are a lot of things that are, you know, for instance, The Babysitter's Club, that was a book series that I loved as a child. And now there's like a Netflix movie series. So just making those connections to the younger me and like keeping the nostalgia has really helped.
I love that. So you're the first person to say that. You know, I've asked other guests in the past, you know, because I had a season in 2020 with the world was literally on fire.
Yeah.
And a lot of guests said, you know, self-care, meditation, journaling, all of the great stuff, right, that we all do. But I love that you go back to your happy days and your happy memories and I think we all kind of do it to a certain degree, but we don't realize that that's a way to cope.
Yeah, I do. I'm really interested in making my inner child happy. I want to kind of reparent, and I mentioned that in the book as well. I'm really focused on reparenting myself because I was raised by a teenager. So there are some things that I may have missed.
Good for you. Awareness is like, it's something. Mm-hmm. It's something. It's called an awakening, and you know.
Right. Oh yeah.
It really is, and it forces you to face, to do what you need to do. And once you do, you realize, we could do this. Good for you. All right. Cool. So let's talk about present day in Boston for you. What's your favorite DoorDash order? Because we're all home now, right?
Yes. Okay. I can talk about food all day.
All right now.
So La Taqueria, they have three locations, I want to say. Rosendale is the closest to me. Great Mexican food, awesome salads. The quesadilla is awesome. Even if you wanted like a cheeseburger, they have a great cheeseburger. Like that place, that menu, top notch. I've frequented Down Home Delivery a couple times
Okay.
for a good soul food meal. Let's see what else. I have also found pizza to be very, very comforting in this time. So there have been lots of pizza nights.
Yeah. You know what? So I have three kids. Mm-hmm. So I frequent BJ's a lot.
Yes.
And we get the, I can't remember the name of it now. And this is a podcast, so they're not going to pay me for it anyways, even if I did remember it. But it's the 3-pack pizza, mm-hmm. and it's the stuffed crust. And I don't like pizza.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not a pizza person unless it's like fancy with a thin crust and like fancy cheese on it. And I don't know what it is about this pizza from BJ's, but it's delicious. And I've said BJ's a few times now. So if y'all want to run a sister check, I will not say no.
There's another, speaking of BJ's, there's also mm-hmm. another one. It's feta and spinach. They have a feta and spinach pizza that is delightful. So the next time you're there, pick that one up too.
Yes, ma'am. And you're right. I don't know what it is about these times, but like everything that my kids enjoy that I've, mm-hmm. maybe it's the taking the time.
Yeah.
So actually give it a chance. Like before it was just like, I ate greasy pizza in high school. I don't want this mess. Like I'm old enough to afford real food, food, right? Air quotes, y'all, real food. But sometimes you just want something simple, something simple, but delicious. And it may clog your arteries, but you're living in the moment. But
Just you once know? In a while, you know, not every day.
And my kids love it. And I would watch them like, how do y'all eat this stuff? But let me tell you, when Corona came around and we all had to eat pizza because the stores were empty, it was delicious and it remains delicious. Mm-hmm. So thank you for lifting that up. It's the simple things, you know? All right. Awesome. So my next question for you, if you had a chance to produce a Broadway show about your life, what would you call it?
Interesting. I probably would name it after the book, A Little Bit of Love. I do believe that if we can just commit to giving ourselves just a little bit more love each day, we'll be so much more blessed. So I think I would write a Broadway story around that concept.
Love that. Now, who would star you?
Oh, me. I got an A in acting class in undergrad.
Okay, she said, yes, ma'am, I will collect all the checks. I will collect the executive producing check. Yes, I will collect the executive directing check.
I would like to be Issa Rae in the next phase of my career.
Okay, now I'm with you from your mouth to the universe's ears. Yes. So let's lift it up. All right, I love it. The next question that I have for you is, what advice would you give to your 18-year-old self?
I have thought about this often. I would ask her to learn patience. Everything felt really urgent when I was 18. That's the year that my mom put me out. It's the year that I went to college, and it just, everything felt like it needed to happen right now. And so I would ask her to learn to be patient and just understand that things are going to unfold the way they need to, even though it looks hard and challenging at that time, just to be patient and to learn the lessons as they come.
Wow. I felt that. And I felt that on multiple levels, mm-hmm. but I felt it most because I have a 17-year-old who's going to be 18. Mm. Right. And
yeah,
he is going to college.
Yeah.
He does want to move out.
Yeah.
He just got a job, you know, and it's like everything is happening at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that for him, and I felt it for my 18-year-old self, you know, and that, and I thank you for sharing that, because we were all 18 at one point.
Right.
And we all felt that urgency to be an adult. Right.
Yeah.
To be an adult, because society says we're adults, and it's taking time to just be patient with yourself and have grace with yourself. And, you know, yes, we're not 18. I'm certainly not 18 anymore, but I can still learn that lesson today.
Absolutely.
You know, and use that lesson.
Yeah. I think it's ridiculous that we look at 18-year-olds and expect them to choose a career or decide what they want to do for the rest of their lives. Be patient, you know?
Patience is a virtue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you for sharing that. This has been so amazing. All right. So I have one more question for you, okay. And then we're going to wrap up. What are you looking forward to?
Well, by the time this airs, I will have already come back. But next week, I am leaving for Belize. I'm spending a month there. It is somewhere I'm interested in relocating to full time. So I want to be able to test the Wi-Fi, see if I can work remotely and get to know the lay of the land a bit. So I'm going to spend a month away.
That is so awesome. Congratulations. I'm excited
Thank
for you, man.
Thank you so much.
Y'all just be doing such amazing things. And even from where you are, you're going to be able to maintain the work that you do.
Right.
And that's another transition that you're going to have to make, but it's really smart of you to like go and test the waters.
Right.
And to see, you know, is this the move I want to make? And, you know, that's, I think that comes with learning patience, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. not jumping, you know, they say,
right.
they say, take the leap, which
right.
sometimes you just have to take the leap and stop, you know, stop doing the hula hoop dance or whatever it's called, the jumping rope dance. But sometimes you do have to take it slow, because when you're making a decision, like maybe for the rest of your life decision, or the next phase of your life, you want to make sure that it's something that you're not, you don't
be
lose
proactive
yourself.
Instead of reactive. I think in the past I've been reactive. I've taken on things when they come to me versus planning what I want things to happen, the way I want things to happen.
I feel like when you have a vision and you have a plan, things work out the way they're supposed to.
Right. Yeah.
And you move according to the plan.
The plan. Absolutely. Yeah.
I love it. All right. Awesome. Well, I'm excited for you in Belize. Send us a postcard, or something. This has been the most amazing, delightful conversation ever. It's such an amazing start to the new season. I'm glad I got to have it with you. Thank you for sharing your story.
Oh, thank you so much.
So you're welcome. Before we wrap up, is there anything else you want the readers to know about you? The readers, our listeners to know about you.
Just that you can find me on Instagram at by Vanessa Lewis.
Y'all, you can find her on Instagram. You can find her on Gumroad. We will link the link to the store, the bookstore, so
Thank
you can
you.
Purchase
yes.
her book. Support a sister. Her book is amazing. And, you know, wish her well in Belize. If you do decide to move, maybe we can come visit.
Absolutely.
We can do a village talk from the road.
Yeah.
But thank you again so much for gracing us with your presence and being our first guest on season 3. I look forward to all the amazing things you're going to do. Maybe you'll write from Belize and let us know how that is.
Mm-hmm. I might.
Absolutely. So thank you again, Vanessa.
Thank you so much, Victoria. Thank you for having me. Thank you to your audience for listening.
Absolutely. All right, y'all, that is it. Thank you again for joining me for another episode of The Village Talk. You know where to find us. If you have any questions or concerns, the email address is in the description. Please don't be a stranger. We are a village. If we can support you in any way, shape, or form, please reach out. I love you all, and I will talk to you soon. Bye.